When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Wyndham Hotels and Resorts makes travel possible for all. Whether it's the long haulers looking for a great cup of coffee, a roomier rest for the on a whim road trippers, or a place to make summer memories with the whole family. No matter who you are, where you're going, or why, with 24 trusted brands to choose from like La Quinta, Days Inn, and Super 8, your Wyndham is waiting. Get the lowest price at WyndhamHotels.com. Restrictions apply. Visit website for more details.
Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Staircase podcast here on Post Show Recaps. My name is Ariel, and I am joined by my co-host, Marissa. Marissa, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. I, you know, feel like I have the power of a leaf blower this morning. I'm just ready to go.
You're going to take on the day, blowing leaves left and right, particularly and then in the summer, you don't, like, what do we do? Because there are no leaves, you know, that have fallen yet, so.
Yeah, but we got to make the noise. That's for sure.
Get all the bats away, even like the metaphorical ones.
Yes.
We are here to discuss the penultimate episode, episode 7.
Can you believe it?
Seek and ye shall. Which seems
I like the cliffhanger.
Right, exactly. It's like, yeah, actually, to that point, I wonder if episode 8 will, like, the name will complete it in some way.
Oh.
But who knows? Love to hear your thoughts on this episode up front. I felt like this was the first episode that I, and this might be just me, felt a little bit like the strain of all these, like, various plot elements. Like, I have this this image of, like, somebody trying to, like, keep all these strands that are all over the place, like, together and, like, holding it down. At least in the first half. Like, I think it did. I was pleasantly surprised that in the second half it came together, and then thanks to Sophie, really, again, thank you to her character. I was, like, emotionally connected again, and I was, like, affected, and I even cried. So I was, like, a little bit worried in the beginning, but then they got me back in the end. So I'm happy about that.
Yeah, I just, while watching this episode, I was like, this story, like, holy cow, there's so many different layers, so many different things, and, like, you could not write it. Like, this is definitely, you know, people say that all the time. They're like, you can't write story like this. Like, mm-hmm. No, this is literally one, like, I could not come up with, like, 800 different things that have happened in this story. And it was, I think, being the penultimate episode, they did try to just give us more and more pieces that I'm sure will be tied together next episode, just given the quality of the writing. Like, I'm trusting in this one. It's not like a we'll see.
You
know, I have a pretty good feeling that that's where we will be next episode. But yeah, like, especially like the opening of this episode, I was like, what is happening? And then, like, throughout the episode, I was like, okay, all right, this is weird. And there was lots of different time jumps. Of course, I loved the conversations around generational trauma, of course. Mm-hmm. Of course, that was a good big highlight for me. Awesome. But I do feel like out of all of the episodes we've watched, this one was like the most disjointed in a way.
Yeah. I think that's a good way of putting it. I think that's to the show's credit overall, right? That like it wasn't until episode 7 that we felt like, is this like as good as the rest of it? Because the first 6 episodes have been consistently strong. And overall, I mean, we had mentioned this along the way, there was like this incremental increase in quality, which again is completely to the show's credit. But you know, like you said, I certainly trust in the writing, certainly based on, again, like I said, the second half of the episode where it felt like, okay, I'm like seeing why these things are important and where they're going. So I'm cautiously optimistic for the finale. It's always weird with these things of like, the finale has to work as like an ending to the show, even though these are real life characters who, for the most part, I think and assume are all still, or most of them are all, you know, alive and well and, you know, doing things and off with their lives. But at some point we just have to stop watching.
Yeah. When I was a kid, I used to think about like the lives of the characters continuing after the TV show went on. And like, that's true here. Like, this is a real situation where it's not like, I used to always think about Alex P. Keaton from Family Ties and like, if he became a Democrat after being a Republican and for so long, I was like, oh, I wonder like if college changed him or like all this stuff. But in this case, yeah, these are real people. And, you know, I also wonder what they think of this portrayal of their story, because from my perspective, it's like so many different things. Not only do we have so many different like ingredients in this recipe, but it's like done in so many different styles that it's like a family drama, a suspense thriller, a murder mystery, a true crime. Like, it's all of these things all together. So it'll be interesting to see which one of those genres like the series lands on. I have a feeling it is like be focused on the family element with like the icing of a murder mystery.
I think that's a great point of like dabbling in all these different genres, so to speak. And like, we already have spoken about like the complicated nature of the story in real life, and you introduce like the documentarian angle and all these people and all these layers, and it just makes it like the web. We have seen it organically. They have done a good job of building this like web and making it for the most part very coherent and very, whether you knew this, you know, the story beforehand or not, of building this thing out, and now to be like slowly, you know, the metaphorical camera that's looking at the web that they are building is like slowly panning back more and more. And now we are about to hit the point where the camera stops and we can look at the whole tapestry. Well, I said web and now I changed the tapestry, but
we get it.
The thing, the art piece. So I'm, as we talk about it, I'm getting more and more excited, I have to say, for the finale.
Yeah, I think like, and I think penultimate episodes either work in one or two ways. Like, there's, it's gonna go like Game of Thrones. I just remember Game of Thrones penultimate episodes to every season was just like, oh my gosh, like, whoa. Sure. So it's either gonna be like the whoa, or it's gonna be the we're setting you up for something type of way. And I feel like this was on the setup side.
So much setup. So speaking of setup, just to set us up, this is episode 7. Like we said, full spoilers ahead from this point. I'm shocked that we made it this long in without them. Good job, us. And this is available on the HBO show recaps feed. And that URL for your podcast catcher needs is postshowrecaps.com/HBO. Make sure to look out for the, you know, the black and white fuzzies that HBO is famous for. That'll clue you in that you've clicked on the right one. I think we can dive in now to the episode.
All right, let's do it. So episode 7 begins with some Lady Gaga. We got some bad romance happening, mm-hmm. which again, I think like this, this series, along with others that we've watched together, Ariel, like do a really good job with music. So I was like reading into this. I was like, what are they trying to say? What is this? They were also, I think, just setting the time. But there's some Lady Gaga playing. There's a house being robbed. And then there's someone saying, Tyrone, before getting beaten to death by a flashlight. I was like, what?
Yeah, it was. And honestly, I was really scared in the beginning because it's dark, right? Like we're in this dark car, or first we're in the dark house and then the person leaves. And then it kind of looked like it was Todd in the car.
Yes, I thought so too.
And I was like, oh no, Todd, don't do this. Like whatever it is that you're going to do, clearly it's bad.
Yeah.
So yeah, relieved to find out later on because I think it takes a few minutes to like get the confirmation of who it is. Yes. Very relieved that it wasn't Todd.
Yeah, I too thought it was Todd, and I was just like, oh no, no, Mexico did you wrong, what's happening? Like, but yes, we do find out later, it was not Todd, but it was someone else. Mm-hmm. And then the credits go, and when we come back from the credits, we are back in Durham, back in the courthouse. It's February 24th, 2017. If we remember last time we were here, this is when David was trying to convince Michael to take the Alford plea, which is basically saying like, hey, I'm guilty of something, but not the thing I was convicted of, but I understand how you could think that, basically is the summary of that. But Michael is like, no, I don't want to do this. I still don't want to do this. I'm not going to say I killed Kathleen. It's not what I want. It's what I need. And I was like, oh, okay. Great. Mm-hmm.
Like, that is very clear, right? That is very speak your truth.
Yeah, and David is like, I think playing a really good role here of trying to keep Michael accountable. He's like saying, think of the money that you're gonna spend if this goes to retrial. If you know, if we say these words, and Michael says, if I say them. It's like, okay, if you say them, look around, you don't have any support. Like there's nothing here. Your best choice is to say these words and to say you did something, but not the thing I was going to do.
Yeah. It's hard. I can't even imagine. I was like trying in this moment. And then again, at the end, when they like, you know, kind of bookmark these, like this timeline, I was really trying to think it's impossible to like put yourself in that position, but I was trying and I was like, oh, I really don't know. And then like in this case, we're like, okay. And I was coming at it from the perspective of, okay, let's say I hadn't actually done it, which in Michael's case, we can't say for sure.
Right.
But even both, like, I guess you can go down the road of thinking both things. Like if you had done it and you didn't do it, then like you really should take it. But like, if you hadn't done it, could you in fact do this? Even though like he's older now in life and it's just, it's really rough.
Yeah. And you have like the third character here of like the justice system as a whole, and like how would you feel if the system did you wrong? Would you do the system wrong just to save yourself, you know? Mm-hmm. Like that whole component of it as well was something I was thinking about. Michael is again just saying like, look, everything that the DA has is inadmissible or compromised. And David again here playing the role of accountability says, except for your lies, Michael, your character, those are still in play. You can't walk back from deceit. Like, yeah, this is like, don't forget you did all these things. Like you may not have, like you may not have killed Kathleen, but
right.
you
may
lie.
Not have done the thing, but you did some things and you lied about some things and people found out that you lied about some things. So yeah, it's rough. You can't have like you can't keep the whole moral high ground mountain. You have like a little table at the top.
Yeah, and if there's one thing we all know about Michael Peterson is that is not what he wants to do. Like, he doesn't want to give up any high ground. He wants to claim the high ground.
I have the high ground. I have the high ground. Very, very Obi-Wan on top. Oh, no.
People talk about the high ground. For me, that part is all about democracy. Like, that's my favorite part of the whole thing. Anyway, going back to the staircase, when we come, we leave 2017 and we go to June 2010, which was an interesting, I don't think we've been in 2010 very often. We've been in 2011, but I don't think we've been in 2010, and Sophie's visiting Michael in jail. Michael's got some fancy new glasses. Sophie's got, like, I gotta say, fab hair in this situation. She's like got bangs. It's flowy. It's great. Mm-hmm. She's looking great. She's not very happy, but she's looking great. Looking great. Mm-hmm. Michael lets Sophie know that he's got a class and class is going well. And Sophie's like, yeah, cool, but I got to go back to Paris. And because Jean is having trouble with the third act, and Michael asks, you know, when do you come back? Mm-hmm. And Sophie's doing a classic, like, I don't know, it's hard to say. Like, and I don't blame her here. Like, how, like, she has been through so much with this man. Mm-hmm. Like, I wouldn't know either, you know, like,
yeah, it's exhausting. Like, it's exhausting to watch. And, you know, it's exhausting to watch her go through all these things, and she's working so hard, and she's so invested, and she is seemingly being so honest and giving him everything. And he, as we know, is giving her very little.
Right. Right. And he asks her for more here, because he says, a penny for your thoughts. She goes, about what? And of course, like, this to me was quintessential Michael Peterson. Come on, about me. Like, mm-hmm. of course, like, I want your thoughts about me. And she says, you know, I'll go to Paris, I'll do the thing. And then he's like, and then you'll come home to Durham. And she's like, Durham will never be home. Like, I don't know what you think here, Michael, but the only reason I'm here is for you. Like, this is it. I've given up all of this other stuff for you. And he's just like, we'll figure it out. We'll figure it out.
He's like, hard pivot.
Yeah. Yeah. We get a little scene of him in class where, like, apparently he's been re-inspired by Sophie creatively, which, okay, mm-hmm. it was all right. Then we go to visit with Margaret and Martha, and we find out that Margaret is divorced. Martha has poured the cup of victory, or what, remember that cup that they passed around to during celebrations? She's put wine in the cup to celebrate Margaret's divorce. Mm-hmm. And Martha's reminding Margaret, like, hey, you gotta just, like, take all this energy that you're putting into other people and put it in yourself, because when you start focusing on yourself, you can't hide anymore. Mm-hmm. And this does not sit well with Margaret. Margaret's like, I can't let the past haunt me. Like, I have to move on. And these are two very different ways of looking at the world. And it's causing some sibling strife.
Yeah. And they're not really, like, talking about the same thing.
Right.
Or they're talking about the same thing, but, like, clearly emotionally, they're not on the same page. And it becomes very clear that, you know, Margaret is I think it's Margaret. It's hard for me to.
Sansa is Margaret.
Sansa is Margaret. Thank you. Yeah, that's what I was thinking. So Margaret is super upset, and it's here that we realize, right, that she never shared the news that she learned with Martha about, like, the potential separation when they were kids, and it's so awful to see that it has affected her so much, and that she has I guess you could say, right, like, she chose to not share it because she didn't want to, like, share that hurt with Martha, but it is, like, eating her up inside and has, like, really affected her, and she hasn't dealt with it. And now it's causing strife with Martha because Martha thinks that it's something else, or that Margaret's just being difficult for some other reason.
Which is what happens, right? Like, anytime I know I've tried to hide information from somebody, or like not tell them something for their own good or whatever, it always ends up hurting me and them in the long run. It's not necessarily good, you know. It's just like stuffing it. I think I'm helping in the moment, but in the long run, not so much. And this is coming up because Martha says she wants to, you know, she saved up enough money, she wants to go home to Germany and visit Patty, who's still living in the same apartment that she's lived in this whole time. And Margaret's like, no, this is not a good idea. Like, don't go. And she's upset. And this is where I think what you were talking about comes into play, because she's like, she's going to find out. Like, she's going to find out about this stuff.
Yeah. And there's like almost that thing of, like, you know, or like on any other show, it's like, you're almost like looking forward to the dramatic release of when this person finds out. But, like, this isn't, I mean, this as a compliment. This show is not that, right? This show isn't like, ooh, how long can we, like, tease this thing out and you know, there's gonna be like, this is a very like human, quote unquote, real world show with like very normal stakes and just like very relatable interactions and family dynamics. So you don't get, so it's not like it doesn't feel overly dramatized or, you know, kind of exploitative in that sense.
Yeah, it's too, as I think we've commented on throughout the entire series, the relationships between these siblings are very relatable and very mm-hmm. realistic. And I see that here as well. And yes. Margaret's like, yo, you're supposed to be helping me. Like, why are we talking about this? Mm-hmm. And Martha's like, why do you care? Why are you so mad? Like, yeah. It's just not good. It ends in like Margaret saying, don't go. And Martha saying, I have to go. Mm-hmm. Like, this is something I have to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then we're introduced to a new government entity, or a new entity, not a government entity, but new entity mm-hmm. called the Project for Actual Innocence, North Carolina. And this, I think they're connected, because I think later in the episode they're referred to as the Innocence Project. So I think they're connected to this, but I wasn't sure.
I couldn't tell if this was like an in-universe thing of like, we can't say Innocence Project, so we're going to say Project of Actual Innocence, or if like there's like a sub thing in real life. I wasn't sure, but we kind of know what it's about just based on the name.
Yeah. Yeah. They are investigating, you know, how things go wrong in trials and trying to get people out of jail because they're actually mm-hmm. innocent. Mm-hmm. And they have discovered that SBI is dirty. What?
No, but it looks so clean. All that like white stuff and like those stairs that they had.
Yes.
Those beautiful glass stairs. Or I guess they weren't glass, but there was like a glass panel. It's the stairs that we see at the beginning, essentially. Like I always kind of see the opening credits as like the building of the stairs at the SBI. It's like it's very like sterile.
Yeah, and they're always in like their like hazmat suity type thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right,
like,
right.
It's like a clean room, mm-hmm. but they're dirty in the corrupt way for sure. Mm-hmm. As according to I think her name is Evelyn, mm-hmm. who has picked up that the SBI has been withholding evidence from trials that, you know, contradict the DA's case. Mm-hmm. Like, something's not right here. At least one person is innocent. I got to keep investigating this. And she's asking, you know, like, do you have motive? And she's like, no, but I'm going to find out. Mm-hmm. So that's moving on. Yeah. Meanwhile,
she's got that look. She's got that look in her eye. You know, it's like, oh, I'm going to get to the bottom of this. And even though we don't know her, you're right. And even though we haven't met her yet before this, we know that she means business.
Yes. Yeah. Back at the medical examiner's office, Dr. Radish is presented with a new case. And we don't necessarily see in this scene, you know, what has happened, but because she's just like, oh my gosh, this is unbelievable. And it's like a skull that kind of looks like Kathleen's. And it's assumingly the person who was murdered with the flashlight that we saw at the beginning of the episode.
So she's
just like, oh my gosh, this is unbelievable. Sophie in the meantime is packing to go back to Paris. She gets an email with an autopsy report, and then we get the scene of her walking to the medical examiner's office to talk about this autopsy report, and at the same time on the phone with Michael, and Michael's like, how's Paris? And Sophie's
it's French, I have to go.
I think her answer is great. She's like, everything mm-hmm. is good here, wherever mm-hmm. here is.
Right. She's not lying. Like,
yeah.
I mean, you know, maybe it's a little of a Michael streak coming out of her, as far as like bending the truth, perhaps, and not quite lying. But we understand, at least here, we understand like her motivations. And she's like, I can't leave yet. I have to, like, this is too potentially important. She's still so invested, even though she clearly is trying to like establish some separation.
Yeah. And that to me was like the hardest part of this episode for me, was just like the amount of emotional investment and time investment that Sophie has put into the story. Yeah. And this is where it starts and continues throughout the rest of the episode for me. But I'm just like, this poor woman. Mm-hmm. She's just trying to understand this man, and she's trying to solve things so she can go be happy with her life. And mm-hmm. stuff keeps happening to kind mm-hmm. of stop her from doing that, like getting this autopsy report.
Yeah.
she goes to visit Dr. Radish, and Dr. Radish is like, I don't know how you got that email, but what here's what I know is that a man has been killed. There is motive. The cause of death was blunt force trauma to the head. And Sophie's like, yeah, okay. Well, what about it? And Dr. Radish says, except there are no skull fractures, which sounds eerily familiar to someone else we know. And she says, Kathleen's death is no longer an anomaly.
An anomaly, yeah. Right, because they had said that like it was the first case in however many hundreds of cases that they cited, and they had the very dramatic, like, these are all the binders with all the cases of blunt force trauma, and there are always skull fractures. And here, similar to the Kathleen murder slash death, there is no skull fractures here. And my first thought was like, oh my god, a serial killer, like, is that what they're trying to, and not that like they're trying to like establish on the show, but of like, oh no, is that what they're gonna like pin it on, like there is potentially, you know, a repeat murderer that isn't something more personal that is later revealed in the episode. But luckily, that's not the road they went down. But the most important thing for me in the scene is Sophie's face when Dr. Radish says that, because she immediately understands it much quicker than I did personally as a viewer. And she is like heartbroken. She's like, no, but like in a much more believable way than I just did it.
Well, because for her, it's not just like case related, it's personal related. Yeah, that means that like there's a chance that Michael could have actually done this. Like, what? And like her heartbrokenness continues because Dr. Radish walks out of the office, and Sophie sees the file of the man whose autopsy report she has, and she finds out that this is Dennis Rowe, and she knows the name Dennis Rowe. And she knows that Dennis was connected to Michael. So she's now questioning like Michael as a whole, like as an entire entity.
Yeah. And it's sad to think like, was I, and it's clear from the rest of the episode that here she's starting to think, oh wait, am I being bamboozled as well? And like, I thought that I was sure. And she, to her credit, she had access as the editor of that documentary. She had access to so much, and she felt like she had this bird's eye view of the entire, oh God, the owls, bird's eye view of like this whole situation, which she did in a way, but I think she, because of that, she felt like she had more control than other people did in Michael's orbit, or certainly more information. And now to be kind of told, no, you may just have been another fool falling for his tricks, is obviously very, very concerning to her.
Well, and especially because I'm sure she can see the parallels of the work that she's had to do for Michael and the work that Kathleen had to do for Michael. And so like, she's wondering, did I get myself... Am I the next Kathleen? Like, did I get myself into this situation? Right. Like, what is happening? Like, I feel like this is my whole world's turning upside down moment for her of like, oh my, what is actually happening? What can I trust? Mm-hmm. Questioning everything. Mm-hmm. Mainly because of this call that she has with Jean. She brings up the documentary footage, and she sees that like Michael has this like very strong reaction to the name Dennis Rowe, and is like, you know, what do you mean, where did this love affair take place, you know, like all of this stuff. And
a little doth protest too much again, and then to watch, and we saw this moment in the first or second episode, or probably not first episode, but like the second or third episode, whenever it happened in quote unquote real time as far as the trajectory of this show. And now to see her watch it with this new lens is super effective, and I think it just makes us feel like we can, like, it makes us vindicated in our original read of it, which is like, okay, this guy is clearly like freaking out too much.
I remember seeing it in the documentary, like when I watched it the first time, and I was like, this is weird. Like this is not like,
the actual
reaction. Yes. Yeah. Like actual Michael Peterson's reaction. I mean, Colin Firth does a good job recreating it, but I do remember like his actual reaction was very close to this, and me, it was like a little red flag. I'm like, oh, something's not adding up here. And she sees this footage and she's like, she's got to call Jean, who's really become like a really great friend to her. I really am like appreciating this friendship between the two of them, because she calls and says like, do you remember Dennis Rowe? And he's like, yeah, of course. Girl, I do.
Of course I remember Dennis Rowe. It's like the best answer you could possibly give to that question.
Well, because Michael was so uncomfortable. And then Sophie, in a very vulnerable question, asks John, you know, like, do you think Michael was lying about Dennis? Do you think that he slept with him? And John, just like any best friend would do in this situation, gives his honest answer of absolutely. He's absolutely, like,
yeah,
I do.
There's no way he wasn't.
He could have done what Margaret did with Martha and shielded Sophie from that reaction. Yeah, but right, chose here to tell the honest truth.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. Sad. I like this friendship.
Yeah. I got a lot of there were tears coming later on in the episode from me for this, or because of their relationship.
Well, do you want to go to the mall? Let's go to the mall.
There are no longer any around, so I would love to go to the mall in 2001. Yeah.
2001. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let's go December 5th, exactly. 2001, 4 days before Kathleen's death. Kathleen's at the mall. She's loving life. Mm-hmm. She's like, I don't think she's loving life. She is escaping as much as she possibly can into capitalism and Christmas. She's
certainly like, living life. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
She is buying things. This is where we see the infamous deer purchase. Mm-hmm. The purchase has to be split on two credit cards, which mm-hmm. is like a very 2000 late 90s way of telling us that there's like financial trouble, like type right. of thing. Mm-hmm. She gets her makeup done and like confides in the person who's giving her makeovers, like like, how's it going? Yeah. And he's like, I broke up with my boyfriend, or my boyfriend broke up with me, and mm-hmm. just kind of just telling him all of the stuff about her first husband, Fred, used to lie all the time. Right. And then this, again, very prolific and very something my therapist would say, the stories I make up in my head can be far worse than the truth. And this is like very interesting because, one, I think that statement is true. Like sometimes the story mm-hmm. I tell myself is very not true and is mm-hmm. way worse than what's actually happening. But at the same time, I think this is Kathleen like gaslighting herself into mm-hmm. like thinking that like the situation that is very bad, it's very bad, not mm-hmm. great, is actually not that bad because, you know, my brain, I can't trust my brain. I can't trust myself.
Because there's the possibility that the truth is not as bad as what I'm thinking, then I'm willing to let a lot slide because it could be worse. Oh, that's
could be worse is rough. Like the worst thing to ever happen to like American like a psyches, any psyches, because
could like, be worse. Could be worse. To that I say, no, it can't be worse than could be worse, because could be worse is doing a lot of damage.
Yes. Don't could be worse yourself. Just don't mm-hmm. could be worse yourself. Yeah. And I felt for Kathleen a lot in this moment because I've been in relationships where I've told myself it's not as bad as I think it is, or it could be worse. Like mm-hmm. I could be a victim of domestic abuse. I could be these things. I could, mm-hmm. you know, be destitute and all of this stuff, but mm-hmm. let me stay in this really not great and not healthy situation because it could be worse. Mm-hmm. I didn't necessarily confide in a person at the mall, but that's how she has no one else. She has no mm-hmm. one else to talk to. That's who she's got. This poor man giving her a makeover is just like, listen, like that's a lot of mm-hmm. stuff. I'm sure he hears this all the time though. Mm-hmm. He does ask, you know, did you get married or get remarried? And she says, yeah, to a real piece of work. He's the strangest, most exciting person I've ever met. And his response, I think, is fantastic, because he says, that sounds great and impossible. And she's like, yeah, that's pretty much how it is.
She's like, oh my God, how did you know? Like, are you in my head? Like, yeah. It was very sweet, but also like very sad.
it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Okay, we're back. And it's still Christmas time.
It's still Christmas. It's the happy, most wonderful time of the year. And Michael is out getting a Christmas tree. I just thought, like, this was a funny comedic thing, I think, throughout the episode, because he gets a phone call. And the guy on the other line is like, MP, what up, my man? And he's just like, who is this?
I would have hung up. I was like, no, please don't speak to me like that.
It's like, it's Simon, you know, mm-hmm. your agent. And he's like, oh yeah, my agent.
Yeah. Clearly they're not in, like, you know, communication all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's calling about his story, Charlie Two Shoes, which we will find out a little bit more about later. But
I have to say, that's a horrible title.
It is.
as far as I'm personally concerned.
Yeah, it's, well, yeah, like, what kind of shoes? Anyway, over in Germany, Martha has arrived at Patty's, and Patty is so Patty at this moment. Like, right. Patty reminds me of, I forget the professor's name at Hogwarts, but like, the character.
Oh, yes. Trelawney, Professor Trelawney.
Yeah, like, she's just like out there, you know, a little aloof, because Martha like arrives from her cross-continental flight, like intercontinental flight. Patty's like, airplanes are so fast.
Like, when she said airplanes are so fast, I was like, wow, this character is such a joy. Like, what a treat.
She's just like, airplanes are so fast.
So quirky. That tells you everything you need to know about her. Just so genuinely warm to Martha here.
Yeah. And she's like, it's so good to see you. I'm so, you know, once you get settled in, we can go to your mom's house this afternoon. Like, whoa, okay, all right. Mm-hmm. Like, we're just gonna go. We're just gonna get into it.
Yeah. I mean, it's why she came, right? Like, it's
that's not, true. That's true.
The bush. Those airplanes aren't gonna, you know, fast themselves. Or
I mean, I would take a nap or at least have a snack.
I would be so jet lagged. Like, remember the airplanes, they're fast. Again, as we keep saying, as she said. So like, let me slow down via this nap, and then maybe we can do it tomorrow.
Yes. At least I would expect it tomorrow. I was not expecting like a today, like a right now. Because the going to the house is like a heavy visit, right? Like, it's not like going to go see the Eiffel Tower or something. Not that that's not like life changing, but
right. But also, I guess now that I think about it, like, you are dealing with the, like, maybe the family that's living.
That's
right,
fair.
Now.
Yeah, that's fair.
Today, so
yeah,
we gotta go today.
So let's go. We go to the house, and Patty's doing like such a great job talking to the family and just like recognizing, like, she says like, there's a lot of pain here. Thank you so much for your time. And the family that's living there like understands. They're like, we heard what happened here. Like we understand. We want to give you a chance to heal from it. Martha just like goes up the stairs and we don't necessarily get what she gets out of this visit until like later, but
until much later, yeah.
She's just kind of like exploring. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, at the laundromat dry cleaners, watching soap operas, we are reunited with one of our favorite people, Freda. Freda's invested in her soap operas. Was not expecting mm-hmm. to see Freda here.
No,
but Evelyn was. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Evelyn is here to talk to her, and this is like I would call it a glow down for Freda.
Yes, yeah.
You know, no offense to her for having to get another job. Like that's not the part. That's like, it's just, you know, we're so used to seeing her so well put together. I mean, obviously she had a very public facing job. She had to stand in front of a jury, in a courtroom, in front of a judge. And here it's like, she's dealing with people's dry cleaning. So it obviously matters less. But you can just see it on her face, even all that aside, that like, clearly she's been through it.
Yeah. Yeah, she's having a rough time. Mm-hmm. So Evelyn's there to talk to Freda. We don't know at this moment what they want to talk about, but we're going to get some like back-to-back type of questionings and scenes, because at the same time, Sophie is miking up Detective Art Holland to kind of go into this theory that she has around Dennis Rowe. And so we get like some scenes with Freda and Evelyn, and then we get some scenes with Sophie and Art. So Freda and Evelyn, like Evelyn takes Freda to like a very nice place. Mm-hmm. Freda is like drinking up the wine. And Evelyn's like, hey, I want to know about one, like your past employer. And she goes, I've had several past employers. Very well-trained lawyer answer mm-hmm. here.
Yeah.
She's like, I'm not one to kiss and tell. And Evelyn here knows exactly what to say, because she says, even though you're working at the dry cleaner and Joe Harden's a judge, like, whoa. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Whoa. Back just, over. Yeah.
She doesn't have a lot of time. So she's got to get to the goods quick.
Yeah, but also give us a lot of information at the same time, right? Like, yeah, I didn't, right, you know, like, course. Whoa. Sophie's questioning Art, and Art's like, everything pointed to murder. Like, I don't know why this is, like, still being talked about, but okay. And she goes, did you ever consider the alternatives? And he's mm-hmm. talks about, you know, like, I wish murder wasn't predictable, but in this case, it was. Mm-hmm. And Sophie's like, was it though? Because Michael sleeps with Dennis. And this is when Art starts putting together, like, maybe this isn't an interview what I thought it was supposed to be about. Like, maybe this is something else, something else. Mm-hmm. What else is going on here?
Mm-hmm.
Back at the restaurant, Freda and Evelyn are talking about, you know, how Evelyn would like to know the relationship between SBI and the DA's office. And mm-hmm. Freda's like, look, SBI is independent. There's no relationship here. And Evelyn's like, that's interesting, because the DA office does the performance reviews for all of SBI.
This is not good information. Yeah. I mean, in so many obvious ways that the show will get into right now, like, it's just such a terrible like conflict of interest, and is insane. And like, you know that this kind of thing happens in real life.
Yeah. And Fred is like, you know, it's not illegal.
Mm-hmm.
Like it may be not
should
great.
should be yeah, but yeah, apparently it's not.
And Evelyn's like, yeah, it's not illegal until the evidence is being hidden to suit the DA's needs, because they are getting judged upon that in their performance reviews. Like, it's not illegal until it is illegal.
Mm-hmm. It's not illegal until something illegal happens.
Yeah. Yes. Sophie and Art's conversation continues. And Sophie's just like, you know, maybe Dennis tells someone he knows about this rich man with a big house. Mm-hmm. And maybe the same man could have killed both Kathleen and Dennis. You know, like maybe this could happen. And Art's like, so you're saying Dennis told Tyrone? And she's like, who's Tyrone? Like, what's going on? Back at the restaurant, Freda and Evelyn continue their conversation. And we learn a little bit more about Freda here. She's talking about how she started as a defense attorney. And she wanted to, I found this like so interesting and so probably true for many, many people in the legal profession. She wanted to start by helping those in need. And then she's like, and then I met the needy. Mostly men doing horrible things to women, and she had to do her best to get them off, and it was easy to do because the sentences were lesser for assault against women than they were for stealing cars.
That's it's pretty brutal to hear her say like, oh, but a car like Grand Theft Auto, oh, that's an actual crime. Super heartbreaking, obviously, and just, you know, you take a look at the world right now, unfortunately, and you're like, okay, yeah, I kind of believe what she's saying here. Like, there's nothing that tells us that this isn't true.
Yeah, and it also just shows like how the system inherently is set up to support certain people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, certain people over others, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Sophie and Art continue their conversation, and and they're just like playing out this theory. So the detective says, you know, say Tyrone is late on his rent. He goes to the Petersons' house to get stuff to sell, surprises Kathleen. This works out great, except there were no signs of an intruder. And so he's like, maybe you missed them. And he's like, no, really. He's
like, but we didn't, because nothing was there.
There's no signs. And he also tells Sophie, Michael knew Tyrone in the same way he knew Dennis. And again, this is chipping away at the persona that Sophie has built for Michael in her head. Mm-hmm. He didn't need to break in because he's been there before.
Yeah.
And he even says,
secret key is, or whatever, you know?
Yeah. He even says to Sophie, Michael slept with a lot of people. Like, I need you to know this.
Yeah, he says it very matter-of-factly, very
brash,
assuredly. Not to hurt her feelings, or I mean,
yeah.
I don't think we know, or we don't get the sense that he's aware that they're together. Although I think it would be, I mean, it's so high profile, who's to say for sure. But regardless of whether he knows or not, that wasn't his intent. His intent is to just like give her information. He's being interviewed and he's just being honest.
Yeah.
And also, I will just call out, I remember the first episode very clearly. They made a big stink about like, oh, or right after the crime, whenever it's being investigated, finally, the first or second episode, there were like, oh, no sign of a forced entry. So
right.
we know for sure that they checked, because they always do, of course.
Right. But he says, you know, your theory about Dennis is legit. I'm going to follow up on this. So this is like, I think, a cop who's doing his best to do his best in the situation. Mm-hmm. Freda and Evelyn back at the restaurant. Freda continues to talk about, you know, her time in the legal profession. So she's like, after I could no longer be a defense attorney, I switched sides thinking I could help in some way. Mm-hmm. It felt good most of the time. And, you know, Evelyn points out, you know, that's not fair that you had to do that. And Freda counters by saying, life's not fair. And the law reflects that.
Yeah. Like, that's brutal honesty. And just like so jaded in a way that she has been defeated. She has been like emotionally like struck down in this way. It's rough to see. It's rough to see our favorite girl, Freda, like this. Yeah.
Well, and I know, you know, as fans of legal shows that we are, you know, like, at least for me, the legal profession has always been like, you know, like the right of justice. Like, you're mm-hmm. going in, you're doing this thing. Yeah. And, you know, the reality of it is kind of what Freda's talking to here is like, it's not easy. It's not, you know, The Good Fight does go into this a little bit, but like who you're representing and what does that mean? And what does that, what toll does it have on you as a person? Mm-hmm. And this is just one way of telling that story through Freda's experience as well.
Yes, absolutely.
And Evelyn tells Freda, hey, look, there are three men who have been executed due to faulty SBI evidence. Like,
okay,
we're going to need you. Will you testify to the quid pro quo nature of the DA-SBI relationship? And Freda, in the most Freda response, says, you know where to find me, sweetie.
Mm-hmm. And she waves. Takes one less swig of her seven wines, and she's like, yeah, bye. We'll go where bye. I'm going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Back over in Germany. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. This conversation was rough. Martha is meeting with Agnes, her nanny, who testified during Michael's trial. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she's just telling Agnes, I can't really remember Mom. And
which is so heartbreaking. And, of course, makes sense because she was so young.
Well, yeah. And it was very traumatic. So, like, trauma, right. Like, you're not going to remember it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Especially at that young of an age.
At that age, right, exactly.
And Agnes just is trying to explain to Martha, like, your emotions were so big that they angered Michael so much so because he couldn't control her. And mm-hmm. so he did bad things. And, like, for Martha to have to ask this about her life is just heartbreaking to me. Because she asks Agnes, did you see him hit me? And she says, no, I just saw what happened after. There were bruises and marks and stuff like that. But Margaret could tell you. She knows. Aunt Blair knows. Like, people knew. And, like, I just, again, what Margaret didn't tell Martha is just a lot.
Yeah, and it's hard here to... I mean, it's hard, but it's also like emotionally satisfying in a way, just from like a removed place of like, we're watching this TV show of it's dawning on, maybe it's not dawning on her of like, oh, this is what Margaret didn't tell me. But like, she knows that Margaret knew at least some of this.
Yeah.
And it's sweet. It's sad. It's heartbreaking. It's all... Family's messy, right? As we love to talk about. So,
yeah,
this is great stuff.
And this is where Martha learns about, you know, her wanting, or Michael wanting to separate her from her sister. But this is where mm-hmm. we and her also learn that there were multiple families that Margaret and Martha were bounced off from. There was a German couple that wanted to adopt them. They went to Texas. They went to Memphis, and they went to stay with Aunt Blair. Like, holy cow, there's just so much in this like 2 minute conversation.
It's a heavy thing to have to hear, or it's a heavy set of multiple facts to have to learn about yourself that you didn't know at all about before, like not even an inkling of before. So it's wild. I can't even imagine.
Yeah. And then Martha, having to hear this information about herself, has to, like, of course, like, process it, really. She's mm-hmm. got to try to figure that out. So the only person she has around to do this with is Patty. And she goes and has a conversation with Patty and says, you know, what was so wrong with me? Mm, and this got to me. This is, like, a question I would ask as a child, like, to myself. Mm-hmm. Like, why are these things happening to me? Like, what mm-hmm. is wrong with me about the situation? And Patty's response is, like, at first I was, like, not great. But throughout the conversation, I think Patty redeems herself. But mm-hmm. she starts off by saying, you were simply acting as a child who lost her father and then her mother. So, of course, remembering these two tragic things happened back to back. Lightning struck twice and it made you a nightmare. Patty, like, that part, not so great.
Yeah, a nightmare. I mean, at least in fairness, she's being her normal, or she's right. being the Patty that we have seen, which is she's saying these things very matter-of-factly. And even if she's using words that are emotionally charged, she's not like putting any kind of
right.
Emotional spin on them.
Right. In that sense. Right. And I think Martha knows that, but at the same mm-hmm. time, she's like, I was three. Like mm-hmm. what else, what choice did I have to, other than to process this in whatever way I could as a 3-year-old? Yeah. And Patty reflects back to her, like, it seemed like we couldn't love you enough. Mm-hmm. Like, there was nothing we could do to calm you down. Mm-hmm. And Martha's like, so you tried to give me away? Like,
yeah.
Oh. And this is where we learn a little bit more in terms of how Patty sees the world, because she says, I live my life thinking that I'm doing my best and everyone is doing their best. And that's all people could do. Mm-hmm. And we can't change them. We just have to accept that this is their best. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when I'm disappointed, it's because, you know, of my expectations on the situation, not because of anything else. And she asks Martha, are you disappointed? And she's just like, I just wonder if all of this hadn't happened, who would I be?
This is incredible stuff. Like, just even from the get, when Patty says, I'm always thinking everyone is doing their best and that's all people can do. And I'm coming from that place. And that's so beautiful in a way. And like, it's so hopeful and it's so sweet, perhaps a little naive, some would say, but I think that it might be helpful to her, you know, it's like helpful for a person to walk through the world thinking that, especially if you've been through a lot. And then for her to, you know, deal with Martha's like extremely deep existential question here that I can relate to, mm-hmm. in the sense of like, what, and I think this came up in the Russian Doll pod, of just like, mm-hmm. if you hadn't been through the things that you had been, who would you be? The answer is very simply, as Martha says to her, you'd be different. In whatever way, whether good or bad, and you'd just be different. And we don't know how different or why different or you know, and what that would look like, but that's not the reality we live in.
Yeah. And I really like how Patty closes this conversation with Martha, because she says, for what it's worth, I really love you, who you are, and I look forward to learning more about who you will become. That's just like such a loving statement.
That's kind of perfect. That's like, yeah. And to hedge it by saying for what it's worth, like, you know, she understands that Martha has like a lot of processing to do, and she's just adding her 2 cents and not diminishing Martha's, you know, thoughts or emotions about it in any way. It's very sweet and very positive.
Yeah. Yeah. We leave Germany to return to Christmas in 2001, and Kellyanne's like all dressed up, looking at the Christmas tree. Michael comes up behind her. It's like, oh, you look beautiful. First of all, like, how do you know? You're just like, I mean, I know you saw the back, not saying that backsides of people can't be beautiful, but like, mm-hmm. it's dark. Like, you can't really see her anyway.
Yeah. Give it a second. Give it like wait a beat to you, then like actually look at her and then like,
yes, like see mm-hmm. her. Like, I think mm-hmm. it's like, they were trying to tell us that in the same mm-hmm. time. Like,
yeah. Yeah. I can see that.
You're beautiful. Beautiful women deserve good news. She's like, Simon called. And she's like, who? I loved it. I loved the like,
poor Simon. Also, okay, hold on. Schuster? Beautiful women, but if beautiful women deserve good news. So like,
I don't get
quote it. Quote unquote, non-beautiful women don't. Okay, whatever. We'll move past that, I guess.
Yeah.
But then this, to your point, the Simon called who, it's just, it become like, at this point, it's become like a little bit of a bit, right?
Yeah.
Like, who Simon is. And also, it's so clear that like, he hasn't heard from Simon in a long time, his agent, because he didn't even remember who he was. So it's just pretty funny here that nobody remembers who Simon is.
And it's great setup for what happens next, because he's like, remember Charlie Two Shoes? It's going to be a movie, a big one. And she's like, oh, Kathleen's like, oh, wow. Like, that's mm-hmm. so great. How much money? And Michael's like, $10,000. It's like, okay.
Mm-hmm. Cool. So you could buy a pool, or I don't even know what you
can't
like
even
a down payment on a car. I don't even know. Like, is that even enough? I don't have a car, so I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, comparative to like what Kathleen earns and mm-hmm. what she brings in and what, you know, she's
and what we will done, see the amount of money that she lost. Like, this is, you know, that even she would say that's not nothing, right? Like, she could put that money to good use, but like, that's not going to solve their problems and like relieve the pressure that she is clearly feeling.
Yeah. Yeah. I just was like, oh boy. Oh, yeah. this is, yeah. It's very Michael to think that he's saving the day with something very, very little when it's really not the situation. And Kathleen's like, we got to light the candles and leave. Now, lighting the candles is something that like spoke to my childhood. We always had like the candles in the window for Christmas. And it was like, if one was out, like the whole thing was ruined. So she's like, dude, like, we got to go.
Light them all while before one of them goes out.
Yes. Yeah. And they end up going to the Nortel Christmas party, which, I mean, this is also a story that is relatable to some of the other podcasts we've done. This reminded me a little bit of The Dropout in terms of like corporations just spending money irresponsibly.
Really nilly. Let's get an ice sculpture with our logo on it.
When things are bad, right? Like, we know, we've seen the signs that from Kathleen having to lay off people and just like conversations, we know that like the Nortel finance situation is not great. And they walk into this Christmas party and it's like super extravagant and like all of this stuff. So, and there's even a conversation between Kathleen and her assistant where her assistant says, you know, remember that company we just bought? We just sold it. Why would we sell it for less than we bought it? Like, ding, ding, ding. Like, not great.
Yeah, and I appreciate that she is, like, clearly I think it says something about the relationship that she can come to Kathleen with that information and just be, like, really honest and just kind of, like, ask her, because she believes that Kathleen will be honest with her, or she trusts Kathleen in that way, and that's beautiful to see. But also, like, the writing's on the wall. You can do, you have it right in front of you. The answer is right in front of you. You just have to, like, think about it for a second.
Right, which ties beautifully into a conversation we're going to get to in a minute between Sophie and Art. Mm-hmm. But while we're still here at the party, we also get this like interesting Michael-Kathleen interaction because Michael cannot wait in a line. First of all, he cannot be bothered to wait in a line. No can do. He has to flirt his way with a bartender to get drinks so that he doesn't have to wait in line, and he returns the drink to Kathleen and is like, you know, I had to butter up the bartender to get
and we
this.
See him we see yes. her we see her watching him do it. So like, she's drinking, or she's waiting for her drink, but she's watching him. We see his hand, I believe, on the bartender's hand.
Yes.
And then he's like and then the bartender's like leaned in close and he's like whispering to him. And he turns around and sees that Kathleen has seen him do this.
And he likes it.
And he doesn't mind it, at least. Like, I think certainly in that moment, I'm like, oh, what's about to happen? And then he's not like cool. He's not like quick to, as I think we would all suspect in situations like these that we see in shows before, where he's like, oh, that was just XYZ. I mean, I guess he does try to minimize it in a second, but as we get to the end of this little interaction, we see that maybe it's perhaps not as, perhaps it's more out in the open than we were led to believe in a way.
Yeah. Well, especially because, he comes back and he says, I could get his number. And she goes, for who?
For who? Deep swig of that martini. It's just, this is like out in the open, right? I think this is, for my money, this is like the most open, quote unquote, conversation that they've had about it. And I use air quotes on open because, you know, they're saying a lot, but they're also not saying anything. It's all in like the subtext of what they're not saying. And there's no weird reaction from Michael when she says, from who? It's just like, or for who? It's just,
he smiles.
It hangs there. It hangs there in the air. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I think this is still like an unanswered question as to whether Kathleen knew or not. But they're giving us just a little bit of how something might have been able to play out in real life. Back in, I think it's 2010 time, Sophie is meeting at a diner with Art, the detective, and he's following up on their conversation that they had previously. And Art tells Sophie, like, hey, look, it wasn't Tyrone. Tyrone has an alibi. he was in jail. So it was Tyrone did not kill both of these people. It was good theory, good thinking, but it's not going to play out that way. Right. It's like, look, you came around. You know that Kathleen didn't fall. And she says, you know, I believe life isn't black or white. Sometimes it's gray, like an owl.
Okay. It just seems so random.
You know, like it could have been an owl or something, maybe. And he says, you know, sometimes life is not that complicated. Sometimes the answers are right in front of you.
Yeah, that's, I think that's a message for a lot of like characters here.
Yes.
In all these different situations. So I think that's interesting.
And I liked Sophie's response here, because she just she says to him, I don't need you here anymore. Like, bye. And she goes to visit Michael in jail. And Michael says, I didn't know you were back. Yeah. She's like, I never left. Well, why did you lie? Dennis Rowe is why I lied.
Speaking of lies.
Yeah. You slept with him and he was killed. Blunt force trauma to the head, no skull fractures. And he's like, okay. And the man who killed him was another man you knew.
This was another man you knew? Like, it's just like very, like the way, it's such incredible, it's very, very subtle work here. It's awesome.
Yeah. And Sophie here now is getting like emotional and she's angry because she's like, look, I have done everything that I can to try and understand the situation. And I went down this road and all I did was open Pandora's box. Like this, I can't keep doing this. This is insane. Yeah. Like, what am I doing? And
and Michael, we watched her do all these things, right? Like when she says, like, I did all this, like I'm driving myself crazy, basically is what she's saying and not saying. We were right there with her for a lot of it. So it rings very true for us in this moment.
Yeah, this is another moment in this episode where I'm just like, the time and effort and like this many years of Sophie's life that she has dedicated to this situation.
Yeah.
Yeah. Big ups for Sophs.
She went from editing this documentary to basically like editing her life in this way of just like trying to make room for him and be there for him and do all these things. And to your point earlier, like, am I just being Kathleen'd or am I being treated like Kathleen by Michael? Am I being Michael'd rather, really? It's I can't even imagine. Like I was about to say, it must be infuriating, crazy making, upsetting, but it's a lot of things, I'm sure.
Yeah. Michael says to her, Sophie, I don't want to be the reason why you can't live the life you want. You want something more?
Oh, God.
I understand, but you are what I want.
Let's not. I can't with this. Like, I don't want to be the reason you can't get what you want. I'm not going to leave you. You have to leave me. I love you too much. Like, that's all the same conversation, and I'm not really here for it.
It's very Michael. This is where Sophie breaks down and she's like, but I'm not her. I'm not Kathleen, but I want the truth just like she did. Like we are connected in that way. Like I want the truth just like she did and I can't share you. I won't share you. Not in the same way.
Yeah, and not in that way. Yeah. Like again, she's like dancing around this thing. Cause it's like, it's almost unthinkable. It's almost like it doesn't fit in her head. Like she hasn't wrapped her mind around it yet. She hasn't quite, I think she knows it's true, but she hasn't been able to fully accept it yet.
Right. Yeah. And Michael says, I know you won't. I'll give you everything. And I don't know.
Like, what does that even mean? What does that even mean?
I was like, okay. What does that mean to you? I don't know.
You don't have no offense to Michael and him being in the situation that he's in physically, but like, what does everything even mean for you?
Yeah.
What are you able to give me?
And why couldn't you give it to Kathleen? Like, why couldn't you give everything to her when she was giving you everything plus, you know, like what, yeah. It was a little infuriating for me. Mm-hmm. And she, or Michael pressures her at the end of this conversation to say like, well, what are we going to do?
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, I need more time. So she needs so much more time and space. She gets on a plane and goes to Paris. And
she gets there fast because, you know,
airplanes
are fast. Like we have been told by a scientist named Patty, and she's like, I have done my calculations and airplanes are fast. I love it. I'm never going to forget that ever.
Anytime we travel, airplanes are fast.
I'm about to get on a plane next week. I'm like, wow, this airplane is super fast.
So she takes a fast airplane to Paris, visits Jean. They're editing the film, which is like some sort of crime situation. And, you know, Sophie's like, there's a lot of work to do. And Sophie says to Jean, you know, I've been out of it, but I'm going to get back to it. And I have to say, this question that Jean like comes to her with next is just, I think, a fantastic question.
I love this. Like, this is the scene that like truly brought me back in the episode. Like, I have to say, like, where this goes, and to your point that you already made earlier, like, their friendship is so lovely, so like honest, right? Like, she's getting like this honesty from him that she obviously doesn't get from Michael. This is incredible stuff upcoming here.
Yeah, he asks her, how is this life you're living? Not like, how are you? How's life? Mm-hmm. But how is this life you're living?
Yeah, because you have chosen.
Yes. Yeah, that's the part, right? Like, it's not a victim mentality that she's been immersed in with Michael. Like, Michael is definitely like, this life is happening to me type of thing. And Jean's coming to her with this, like, how is this life you're choosing to live?
Yeah. And he knows her. I mean, he has obviously known her for years at this point. Like, seemingly they had a working relationship, at least, even before they worked on the documentary together. And we saw them become very close through the documentary process. And we see him around in the future in 2017. So clearly they're still have maintained a certain kind of friendship. And to see them, like, he has known her, he watched her choose this life, right? To the point of like, how is this life you're living? How is this life that I watched you pursue from afar and supported you, seemingly, right? From what we saw, very supportive, very sweet, always like on her side, wanting her to be happy, to get everything that she wanted. How's that going for you? And not in a judgy way, just like, I know he's one of the few that can ask her this question. He's one of like the few people in her life that can ask her this question.
Yeah, it's like he's been watching the Sophie movie.
Yeah.
And she's been acting in the Sophie movie. Yeah. And so it's like, how's that film you're working on?
Yeah, what's the cinema score? Yeah, what's that rotten score for you? How are you feeling about this?
Yeah, but I think it's like such a beautiful like testament to like true friendship. And like, he may not have agreed with her choices to write Michael or to be involved with Michael or to move to Durham or like any of this stuff, but he supported her through it and didn't judge her and is checking in, not even judging here.
Right.
It's just A plus modeling of friendship by Jean here and great Sophie.
Stuff,
Sophie says, you know, I don't know anymore. Everything was so simple at the beginning. And he's like, that's love. You paint people in the best light and then the light fades. Sometimes you find it again and sometimes you don't. Again, brutal honesty from Jean.
I went back because I had to hear that again. I was like, sometimes you see beauty or you hear something beautiful and you're like, oh, I need to make sure that I caught that, because it was even just on the first glance watch. This is incredible stuff. And you paint people in the best light and then the light fades, like,
so poetic.
They're speaking in French, right? So oui. I imagine that it's even more beautiful in the actual French. Like, this is just like the bastardized like translation. Mm-hmm. No offense to the translators. That's just like, you know,
it's for Americans.
In the process of like translating a thing, no matter how well it's translated, you like inherently lose at least a little piece of the very specific context and intention and whatever. But like, I can't even imagine. This is just so beautiful in the translation that it's easily for me one of the most profound things that the show has said yet in all seven episodes.
Yeah, I mean, this combined with that "How's this life you're living" thing, mm-hmm. like, yeah. So good. So yeah. They really brought their A game to the scene. This was a good one. Mm-hmm. And Sophie says, you know, if I can't be with him, if I can't understand him, I at least have to know what happened that night.
Yeah,
like why them? And Sean again comes in with the "even complicated love is better than no love sometimes." But it's like, oh,
damn, it's
the truth, yeah. Daggers, the truth daggers.
I know. And to, and a little bit to the point of like, the how is this life you're living, like the a little bit of the subtext of even, you know, complicated love is better than no love. It's because like she's choosing to make it so, mm-hmm. right? Like she's choosing to remain in this situation. And to your point, he's not judging her for it. He's just saying, sometimes we put ourselves in a situation that we're accepting all these things that we may not want to be accepting, or we may not, that may be unacceptable, but we feel good because it's something, like we're connected to something, and that's just human.
Very much like Kathleen. Right? Like, yeah. Same type of situation with her, you know? Absolutely. Like, he's the most complicated, like, he's whatever the guy at the mall said is like, that sounds fantastic and impossible, you know? Like, right, those two things at the same time. Mm-hmm. Then John has to leave to go take care of his kids. So Sophie looks at the tape. And this is an interesting clip that they pull, because David is like asking around the table again, you know, Kathleen must have known, right? Like she had to have known, because has anyone in this room successfully hidden anything from their wife?
And said in that way of like, am I right, guys? Am I right?
Yeah. Hey,
we're all liars. Ha 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 ha.
Yeah.
Not great.
I do appreciate the commentary about that in this series. I was not expecting to get this type of commentary about like the patriarchy and women, just like the role that women play in households. I am very much enjoying that.
And it's very
illustration of that.
It's very subtle. Economical. Yeah, it's very economical because they're doing a lot, as we have already said. There's a very complicated story and they're doing a lot, and they're finding these moments to say these things and make them relate to the story.
Yeah.
In a way that doesn't make them feel like they're like trying to shoehorn this like other idea into the story. This is just like organically built into the skeleton of these characters, and it's awesome. I love it.
Yeah. Me too. Me too. I also love how Evelyn was super determined. She like she did this thing. She's like, uh-huh. This is not a one-off thing. She thinks she has motive. And then we cut to our favorite warehouse, the SBI warehouse with the fake stairs and the fake blood and everything. And we see the guy, I forget his name, but I think it comes up later. The guy that we saw at the convenience store that one time when Michael went to the convenience store, who was like the lead SBI investigator on his case.
Right.
There's like a SWAT team comes in. It's very like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Let's get this guy arrested. And there's a news conference that is being watched by Bill, Michael's brother, where Evelyn is saying, you know, SBI has failed to perform their duty. They withheld test results that contradicted the DA's case. And we plan to audit all of SBI cases to date. And Bill is just like, oh, okay. Like,
well, I need to get back there. I think he lived in, I mean, at one point early on in the show, I think he was living in Chicago. So he's probably either there or somewhere else. And he's like, I gotta get back to
Vegas.
We do see him later with a suitcase when he goes to visit the lawyer, so we know he's coming from somewhere.
Yeah, he has to get on a fast airplane and go visit David at like that day. Like, I think he just like packed his bags, got on the airplane, and got there because David greets him with like, my money was on tomorrow, but you know, tonight works.
I love that. He was like, yes, that's totally. I totally knew you were coming, but I would have bet on tomorrow. It's great.
And Bill is like super upset. He's like, you should have known how corrupt they are. He's like, yeah, of course I knew. Like, this is why we did all the things we did. This is why we had all of our tests. This is why we documented everything. This is why I'm so expensive.
Right. yeah.
And no one's talking about giving up here. And Bill's like, yeah, you did 3 years ago. You left my brother to rot in jail. And like, there's still some animosity here between Bill and David, because I don't think Bill agrees with how David, like, he views him as like giving up on the case.
Right, right, right.
And David explains, like, hey, I've been haunted by this ever since it happened. Like, this really shocked me. And I have, you know, kept this legal review magazine thing to remind me of like all of the mistakes I made that I can only see now. And so, like, I've learned from this. And P.S. by the way, the SBI didn't fuck us over. It was the agent, Dwayne Deaver, who lied about his experience. He perjured himself. And I was like, oh, wow. Okay.
That's even worse. Yeah, that's worse than just the SBI, like, you know, vaguely corrupt stuff. This is like actual wrongdoing.
Yeah. And that means, you know, we get a hearing. There's no trial. And if it goes the way we want to, he'll be out. You know, like, this is good. And Bill says, look, I don't care how long it takes. I don't care how much money it costs, because you're going to figure this out and you're going to do it for free. Like, I'm done. Like, we are, you're going to do this and we're going to get to, we're going to get my brother out of jail.
Yeah. The do it for free part was like, I wasn't expecting David's response to be like, all right, fine. But yeah. I mean, how much more money could they possibly give him after all this time?
Well, and I also feel like it's like a choose your battles moment for him.
Yes,
right, you know, like, what do I really want to fight this guy on? So we see back in 2017, you know, presumably after they've been through all of this stuff, they got to the point where they could get this plea, this Alfred plea. Again, Michael's not listening. David walks out into the hallways like he's not listening to reason. Sophie's like, don't worry, I got this. Let me go in and talk to him. And Michael's like, I know this wasn't our plan, but I can't lie anymore. And Sophie does, I think, a good job in talking to Michael, because he says, or she says, you could take this plea and we can leave and we can be done. No matter what you do, you know, I'll be here. But I'll tell you one thing. The DA doesn't care about what really happened. Like, this is a crooked system.
Yeah. And she's saying that as like an outsider who is able to look at it, I think, more honestly, or more, I don't know. Like, I think it's easy when you're in the thing, right? Like, being from here and growing up and looking at the system a certain way. And she's able to be like, listen, it really is actually this way.
Yeah, she didn't get the law and order version of believing in the justice system. Like, she saw this was her version of the justice system.
Yeah.
She says, like, the table is crooked. And Michael's like, but why can't they just go back and say they made a mistake? That was never an option. But today, I guess, you know, today it is. He's not gonna bend. He's not gonna break. But he needs to speak with Jean. Jean, he needs to speak with him alone, apparently. I don't know why he needs to talk to Jean, but
And do we find out? I don't think
find
out. I think that's like a hanging thread, I guess, for the finale.
Yeah. So we go back to, I think, 2001. We're at Nortel, where Kathleen works. And this is a very Office Space scene in Office Space the movie scene for me, because Kathleen gets called in to talk to the two Bobs, in my mind. I don't know what their actual names are, but it was named Bob. Kathleen's very nervous. She gets told, you know, there's no year-end bonuses. And she's like, okay, cool. But I just watched our stock drop 27% in the last 4 minutes. So who really cares about year-end bonuses? I've just lost my entire retirement. Nearly $1 million.
And she walked in saying, or like, this was my read. Like, she walked in thinking she was going to lose her job. So
yes,
like,
there's a moment.
There was like all the dread, and then she's watching the stock tank, and then So she gets in there thinking she's going to lose her job. She hasn't lost her job. They're just taking a year-end bonus. And it's kind of like immediate relief. But then like, oh God, but like, would that almost have been better probably for her to lose her job? Because now we're going to stay. And like the ship is clearly sinking. The stock is
right.
sinking.
Right.
It's, and Toni Collette here, like we have lauded praise before. And like, it's so, especially this episode, I so appreciated something that you and I have talked about before of like, giving a voice to this woman mm-hmm. who in this story for the most part and for obvious reasons in the documentary and in other versions of like the story has no voice because she is her death is what starts the story basically right in a way mm-hmm. and it's so almost beautiful in a way to like see her truth be told, or maybe lowercase t, right? Because we, you know, some of these situations I'm sure really happened and are based on evidence, and some of these situations they're maybe like extrapolating, you know, dramatizing some of these truths. But it is so beautiful to me to see her life, like in all its ugliness and it's all its like uncomfortableness. Just she was a real person who lived a real life, and that's valid and that's easy to forget in all the like circus media storm of like all the case that came later.
Yeah. I mean, I really hope that Kathleen's family, like her sisters and stuff, like feel like Kathleen was represented in some way. Yeah. I also think that when this happens, when you don't have you're telling a real life story and you don't have that person, as a storyteller, you have an opportunity to generalize and yeah. to speak to a wider audience of like women as a whole and yeah. make it just like more relatable in that way. So like, to your point, we don't know what really happened. It's mm-hmm. very easy to believe that this is how things went.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, this scene and the next one are like, Toni Collette should get some sort of award for how she went through with these. Because after she gets this news at work, she has to go to Michael's celebration dinner at a Chinese restaurant.
Yeah. We don't love it. We do not love to see it.
No. Especially because Michael walks in like a sweatshirt and like he has like no care for the situation. He's late. Mm-hmm. He didn't dress up. Mm-hmm. You know, he comes in and he's like, someone gave me Christmas chores. And she's like, yeah, it's like the least you could do, bro. Like,
yeah, he's just, he's such a little shite here. And he's just like, someone gave me Christmas chores. Like, do you know what she's going through? Clearly you don't, because you never ask.
Right.
And like, she's putting the burden on her to come to him with all her problems. But like, clearly she doesn't feel like she can because there's no comfort there. It's just like,
ugh. Yeah. And Kathleen has gone wild here. She's just ordered a lot of food. I think she's just like her world is crumbling around her. Yeah. So she's like, I will indulge in this food.
This is very relatable. This Chinese food like buffet that she has created for herself.
Yes.
Big fan of Chinese food, big fan of ordering way too much of it and not being able to decide what I want and just deciding on several things.
Ooh, yeah.
So
yeah.
This is relatable. I smell a lunch order coming. this is very relatable.
And I think Michael can pick up on the fact that like she's nervous and like things are, something's up. So he offers, this book option could lead to some real money. And like, you could rest and not be stressful. And Kathleen's like, okay, cool. Well, I have to tell you this. Our stocks tanked today and we lost everything. Like Paris gone, retirement gone. And Michael gets mad. He's like, we're poor. Like, what did you do to contribute to the situation? We're not poor. Kathleen is poor. Like,
this is right. You are the poorest part of her.
Yes.
I think it's like, it's so, and even just his statement of, you could rest because you're looking tired.
Yeah. Like
it's infuriating. It's infuriating. It's
so judgy. Mm-hmm. She's like, I have wasted years of my life. Like, mm-hmm. I have sacrificed so much. I've raised your children, like all of this stuff. And you think like the movie's going to work out? Some Hollywood producer's just going to like make you a millionaire? The only way this is going to work out is if I make it work out. And I'm way too exhausted to make this work out. So like, I can relate to that. I have been in that point where I felt like it's all on my shoulders, but I'm too exhausted to make any of it happen.
Yeah.
And I'm not even married. So like, I can only imagine like being in a marriage and having this happen.
Right. I'm just poor alone. Poor alone. I can't even imagine being poor with another person.
And she's like, or Michael's like, you're not alone here. And she's like, sometimes I think it would be easier if I was.
Oh God.
And we're like,
yeah, it'd probably be a lot easier for her if you weren't around.
Yeah. And Michael's like, okay, let me unleash all of the Michael-ness in the situation, because he's like, oh, I see. Joan of Arc burning before me. You used to be fun. You used to take care of yourself. Used to be a good time. I'm sorry. A good time.
I can't with this.
It's so bad. It's so bad. And she, I do have to give it up to Kathleen for saying to him, you know, I'm too busy to be a good time working, raising your children. You just get to wander through life, going to the gym, yelling at the dogs, spending my money. I thought I had married a man when it turns out all I got was a boy who's only good for getting drinks at the bar.
Yes. Say the
Mike
things.
Drop. Mike
this is
drop.
Great. She is dressing him down so succinctly. Like, she barely has any energy left, but she's using all her reserves to make incredible word choices and incredibly cutting comments. I love it.
Yeah, and she's like speaking her truth, right? And she's expecting for that truth to be met with like something. And Michael's just like completely shut down, like not even responding, not even angry. Like anger at this point would be a response, I think, that Kathleen
would
appreciate,
more of a
right?
Response. Yeah, right.
Yeah, he's just like sitting there and she's like, are you even here? Are you even like, and it's like such a plea, right? Like, it was, at least to me, I read it as a plea of like, be Absolutely. Here with me. Like, right. This is where I'm at. Are you even at the same place as me? Are we even in the same Chinese restaurant? Like, where are you? And he's like, I'm here for you, the kids, my parents, my men in war. I've always been here. Maybe you've disappeared. What? No.
This is again, like, you used to be a good time.
Yeah.
You're different now. You changed. You're not the person that I fell in love with. Ugh, it's garbage. It's garbage.
This is classic not wanting to take responsibility for anything type of situation. But he thinks he's standing up for himself because he says, I'm not going to continue to be your whipping boy, which, okay. This angers Kathleen a lot. She gets up and throws money on the table and leaves. Michael follows and is like, hey, you're upset. You shouldn't be driving. Like, again, very condescending.
Right.
Turn up that classical music. Let's road rage at home. And we get to the house. Michael, of course, is going to stay in the car listening to the song, which is his only coping mechanism that we really know of.
Yes. I did appreciate that was like a callback to that like story he told of like the first time he heard that song, and like it was classical music and he thought it was so beautiful. I don't remember the details because he's annoying, but I appreciated the callback.
Yeah. And Kathleen is like, she goes straight in the house. She's ready to take a shower. She turns on the shower. And of course, there's no water. Of course.
Oh, man.
Of course, there's no water. Meanwhile, out in the car, Michael is conducting. He's also like using finger guns and pointing them at the house. I thought that was really interesting. But Kathleen's like, I've had enough of this.
Bizarre. That's bizarre. That's about bizarre behavior.
Right? Isn't it? It's something that would be, you know, picked up by a psychological profile, I'm sure.
Right.
Kathleen, I just have to say, I loved this. Like, she's down to like her bra and a skirt, and she goes and she gets this leaf blower and she puts it on her back. She's just like, I'm out. I'm done. I'm done with this. Let me go take care of business.
Who are you going to call? Not Ghostbusters. You're going to call Kathleen. Because she is not about this. This thing has been bothering us since like episode, I don't know, episode 4-ish or even 2 or 3, whenever the bats first appeared. And it's been like, we've seen this. Shout out to Morpheus in the Matrix. It's like a splinter in her mind. Like, it's just like, it won't leave her alone. And it's like seemingly, and I had brought this up on a previous pod of like, it's almost like a horror thing of like, she seems in some moments to be the only one who can hear it. And with the Michael dynamic, obviously she feels like she's the only one who's going to do something about it. And she asked him to do something about it so many times. And so many times I'm sure that we didn't even see on camera, quote unquote. And now she can't even take a shower after the Chinese food.
Yeah, like she takes matters into her own hands after this and just gets up in there and gets rid of all of the pets. I loved this. I loved this entire situation. I love because we could feel the frustration that you were just expressing. And it was like personified in a leaf blower gun moment of Kathleen going up into the attic and just blasting the bats out of the house. And she doesn't even care that they're breaking windows, like coming out of things. Like they're just flying out everywhere. Michael's like in the car, completely confused. Like, yeah. What is going on? It was great. I really liked the scene.
No, it's awesome. Like, and also just to, like, get that the image of the bats, like, as a release for her frustration, like the personification of like her, and I think you said this a little bit already, but like an explode, like it's almost like a superhero moment for her, right? Like she has all this power and she's like, ah, she's so powerful, and they all have to leave because they can't deal with her power that is the leaf blower. I also kind of have to say, I don't really understand how she used the leaf blower, but I don't really care.
I mean, like, at this point,
I don't need to know. I just wondered, but it's such a great moment.
I think regardless. She just like literally climbs up in the attic and just like sprays air everywhere.
Right. If they're all around, because I was thinking like they're hidden and like how would she like blow into like these ducts or these holes that they're hiding in, but yeah, I'm sure a lot of them are just around, so they were like, they want us to pay rent, we gotta go.
Well, and I don't know, quite honestly, I'm sure the wind had like something to do with it, but I'm sure bats are not used to hearing that noise either, so like
that was my first thought, like the way that dogs hate like vacuum cleaners, it's like,
yes,
right, and bats have like supersonic hearing or whatever,
sonar,
right?
So I'm sure, stuff too, yeah,
I'm sure it's like it's very upsetting for them,
yeah. So it could have been a combination of factors, but she knew what to choose. She went up there and she took care of it way faster than Michael ever could. Yeah. But yes, I loved it.
Mm-hmm. This is great stuff.
Then we are thinking back in 2011, we start to see this last scene of this episode, like Margaret's just like outside of her old house, just kind of like looking at it. And she almost gets caught by the new owners. They're like, hey, can I help you with anything? She just like, gets back in the car and goes to the Peterson family reunion at the hotel the night before the retrial hearing in December of 2011. And it was really interesting to see all the kids kind of arrive because Margaret's there. Martha arrives. Seemingly, this is the first time they've seen each other since they had that argument about Martha going to Germany. And right. I doubt like Martha even has told Margaret everything that she learned Germany.
Right. Totally. There's all that working like beneath the surface.
Yeah. And then Todd arrives and he seems okay. He seems normal-ish.
Yeah. He didn't kill anyone at the beginning of the episode. So yeah. He seems to be doing fine.
And Clay arrives in a minivan, family man Clay, the one
with
we thought
all his kids. I love a good the kids have kids. Like this is so good. Like it's, you know, the siblings and they, you know, they're being respectful of each other, they're being mature. There does seem to be like genuine warmth between all of them, and like they're happy to see each other, and they also I think are all aware of the fact that they are there for a reason that might be emotionally complicated at best for all of them. So they know that they are kind of all they have.
Well, because they're like about to re-traumatize themselves, right? Like they're about to like step into a space that was not fun for them before. And it brings up like so many things, not only what happened, but then like the experience of being on trial the first time.
Yeah.
And what has happened to them since then? Like it's a lot kind of coming together at the Clarendon Inn, again, relatable. It's definitely like a road trip stop for me. It's like a sleep in, something like that. So that's where we leave it at the end of this one.
It's like it's the closest thing to sweet that we can get in this situation. Because there is warm and there, it's all warm, like I said, and it's, you know, it's kind of like a, it's like a, there's a little bit of like slow-mo montage-ish stuff, and like there's music playing, and it's just, again, it feels like it's so realistic to like family coming together, and like that you're so excited, and there's also like all this, you know, underlying resentment between certain people, and each relationship is different, and I loved it. Like this is all, they've done such a good job of like representing all the family dynamics and building it from the beginning and making it feel organic. And this is just, you know, reaping the benefits of all the hard work they've done throughout the rest of the episodes.
Yeah. I mean, it also leads, that's what kind of leads me to believe that like family is going to be at the center of the finale as well. Yeah, right, just sure. In terms of how it ended.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And speaking of the finale, that's it. That's all we have left. Next week is episode 8.
Can you believe it?
It's crazy. We will finally reach the top of the stairs.
Oh boy. Just don't look back. Don't fall down.
Don't look back. I've been holding on the whole time, like holding on to the banister.
Yeah. There's no shame in using the railing, people. Like,
I know. And when I was a kid, I totally was. It was a thing of like, I don't need that. And now I'm like, I only need that. I don't even care. Yeah. Like I'll put both hands on it. I just want the ball. I can't believe it. Yeah. What a journey. What a journey we've had to get here.
Yep. I'm glad we did it though. I'm glad. Like I was really surprised by this one. I would say, I know we haven't watched the finale yet, but this is like the highest caliber crime show that we've covered, at least. Like there's so many different layers to it and so many different things. I've really, really enjoyed diving into it.
Yeah, the amount of the level of quality that we have gotten when you take into consideration, as we keep saying, the level of complexity that the show has had to juggle, I think is super, super, super impressive. And I can only believe that regardless of how much or how little we get in the finale, that it will be at least emotionally satisfying. I think they've earned our trust in that sense.
Agreed.
Yes. So that is it for us on this episode. Marissa, what else have you got going on?
Well, I just kicked off some Umbrella Academy coverage with Frail Mary, aka Mary Kwiatkowski. We are diving into the entire series. We will have a season one rewatch recap. We will have a season two rewatch recap. And then season three starts on June 22nd. So
coming up fast.
Lots of stuff happening there. And I think like we have plotted out like almost 2 months worth of coverage. So if you're into Umbrella Academy, that is where you will find me. I also just wrapped up coverage of This Is Us with Jason Reed. And we had Asia and Sarah Bergenson on the show, the final recap show that just dropped this week. So if you wanted to sort of know how we thought about the series as a whole, that's a podcast for you to check out. But otherwise, you can find me in the Post Show Recaps Discord, which you can get access to if you join us on Patreon, patreon.com/postshowrecaps. The start of the month is always a great time to do so because of the way that Patreon bills,
they always charge you for the whole month, regardless of when you press hit, when you press play or whatever.
We want you to get the most bang for your buck. Yeah. So join us. If you're going to join us, this week is a good week to do so. If you become a patron of Post Show Recaps, you do get access to our Discord at any level. You also get access to exclusive podcast feeds, including shows that you cannot hear on the main feed, and even including a super fancy plus feed where there's us without commercials. So
PSR Plus, we're getting in on Eat Your Heart Out, Disney.
Yeah,
we're getting in on the Plus.
We're reclaiming the Plus.
We're reclaiming the Plus. There's room for us in the Plus. Plus us. That's what.
Yes, I love it.
I love that.
Yeah, you can get access again to all of that at patreon.com/postshowrecaps.
Also
on Twitter, I'm at Mars Bars, MarzBars.
Awesome.
What's up with you, yo?
I am also on lay Twitter at that other Ariel. I am covering movies with Grace every week. This was a doubleheader for us. This was a doubleheader week. We covered the amazing Top Gun early in the week with guests DJ Lavelle Klein, and then we had we covered the Downton Abbey sequel.
Yeah.
Which was also as equally amazing, and at least for me.
Yeah, hear that, and, Tom? Hear that, Tom? Equally amazing.
Yeah, hear that, Tom. We had Jess Sterling and Sarah Ferguson as guests, so that was really beautiful. A little bit chaotic, just from my side. Not that they were. I had a time, and I hope that everyone had a good time, and people have a good time listening to it. And I think that's it for me. There's some other stuff coming up on the horizon, but this is... You know, it's the summer, so everyone's trying to get out of work on Fridays early and that kind of stuff. So, you know, I think that's enough for now. And if you're still listening to us, we so appreciate it. As always, thank you so much for coming on this journey with us. We will be back for the big, big, big finale next week. Until then, bye.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void. We're prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from, with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from, with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.